Now, PW Torch brings you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's WWE Monday Night Raw.
So, Brandon, development in the Dark Order tonight, Buddy Murphy has joined.
Yeah, it felt a little bit like that.
I didn't even plan to say that. It just came out. I mean, I thought about it, but you know, I thought about how it was similar. But it was like, yeah, I mean, that is the top story here. Is WWE Monday Night Raw, Paul Heyman and company, they're outdoing the Dark Order to the point that it'll seem by the time AEW gets around to introducing the Dark Order leader. And it's not going to be Marty Scurll, but it could be somebody else who's not available to show up under contract at the moment. By the time they get around to it and start accepting people, more people, I guess, than a couple, you know, jobbers, it could seem like a rerun. But I was going to say on a serious note, but that is sort of a serious note. I mean, they kind of are outdoing them on one of their big storylines here. But Seth and the AOP defeat Big Show, Kevin Owens, and Samoa Joe with help from Buddy Murphy, who was just despondent at ringside after losing yet again to Aleister Black in another competitive, crisp, hard-hitting match. What'd you think of that as a development for the Messiah of, or the Monday Night Messiah, Seth Rollins, and what this means for Buddy Murphy?
Yeah, there's a lot to unpack there. I think the match as a whole, I don't really understand presenting it as a fist fight when it was more or less a no disqualification match of sorts. I don't know. They like to kind of throw these strange stipulations out there, and they publish these rules to kind of get attention surrounding it. But it just felt mostly like a no DQ match. So that was fine. Nothing wrong with the match in and of itself. As far as the situation with Seth, I think this is a dramatic improvement from where he was the last time I was on a Raw post show. I think the last time I was on, I just flat out had no idea what they could do with him at this point. And I think we're seeing the best of a bad situation, and it's sort of turning into a good situation for them. I think AOP is working well as Seth's henchman, and I'm intrigued by Buddy Murphy joining their ranks. It sort of felt a little bit more like a trio to me. You know, AOP is as sort of the two heavies behind Seth Rollins kind of doing his bidding, but if they want to expand the group, I'm open to seeing how they handle that. I was a little bit upset by the fact that Aleister Black didn't come to the babyface's aid. You see that old WWE trope cropping up of you know, babyfaces not really supporting each other in the face of strong heel dynamics. But yeah, I think overall this iteration of Seth Rollins has been a vast improvement. It's a vast improvement over his whiny, sniveling heel character from a few years ago, and I'm really intrigued to see where it goes.
Yeah, I continue to be a big fan of Monday Night Raw. This is a stretch of show, the longest stretch of shows in a row that I've enjoyed largely start to finish. I mean, you know, the wedding was the wedding, you know, I mean, yeah. It is what it is. It continues to be what it is. Wasn't enough to drag it down for me. And it was sort of a guilty pleasure just given how weird it all was, but surrounding it with, again, I just think this optimization of an all-star roster that, you know, Paul Heyman has manipulated himself into attaining. Not that he would love to have Daniel Bryan or, you know, whatever. I mean, it's not like it's totally lopsided, but I think what Heyman ended up with is a roster of wrestlers who are benefiting greatly from the show that he is, last I heard, executive director of, and has had growing influence on, and continues to be behind the scenes coaching and directing and producing wrestlers. I just thought, yeah, I like what you said about Seth. This is a really good reframing of Seth. It is a maximum utilization at this point of AOP. They're not in the tag division. They are above the tag division. They are part of a top heel faction to let Buddy Murphy earn the respect of fans and show off in three stellar televised matches and put over Aleister Black, who benefits, but then end up in a better spot himself because of how hard fought, how the performances he put on in the matches. But then how, you know, the agony of defeat, you know, you're selling the idea that losing counts for something. And then he gets to join the Tapio faction and be in a relevant situation and not defined down or moved out of the mix. And on and on, you know, I mean, heck, Mojo Rawley's being utilized well and probably in the place he should be, you know, I mean, Drew McIntyre continues to be really intriguing. They have him, I mean, almost by definition positioned as a tweener. He's between a heel, AJ Styles, and a babyface, Randy Orton. Between, he's a tweener, and he's some of what he does seems heelish, some of what he does seems babyface-ish. He steals a pin, which is sort of heelish, but he pins AJ Styles, which is sort of babyface-ish. And 5 years ago on the flagship show with Jason Powell, we were talking about Roman Reigns and fans rejecting him, and one of the things that I said is, WWE decided for the fans that he was the top star and they should like him, and they were pushing back. And at 2020 hindsight, 5 years ago would have been, let the fans decide that Roman is underpushed and deserves a push and that they like him before you give him the Superstar of the Year award, which was, you know, the beginning of one of the many, you know, dominoes that knocked over, leading to the rejection of him for so long. And I think that's what's going on here. Like, I think they're letting Drew kip up once successfully, twice successfully, but almost not, and smile more, seem like he's having a good time, but not be pushed as the chosen one, which was ironically once, you know, he was once christened that by Vince McMahon. So I just a lot of cool things continuing to happen on the show. I recommend people who substitute listening to this for watching Raw, give Raw another chance, because I think you'll be pleasantly surprised by it. And the ratings are, you know, looking good, you know, relative to a year ago and relative to last fall. So anyway, yeah, I thought this was another good show. I mean, for me to not be complaining about the show being too long is in and of itself an achievement. And I'm not sitting here thinking, oh God, this show's too long, in part because of the shorter squash-like matches that they're putting in there. That kind of breaks up the pace of the show and adds some chances to see wrestlers do their signature spots, score big wins, and get elevated, where you're left wondering what if they faced, or what it would be like if they faced somebody tougher. So, and then Brock Lesnar smiled. We had humor coming out of Paul Heyman, like a full-fledged old 1980s Paulie Dangerously performance from him that it feels like it's been forever since we've seen. So I like this show quite a bit.
Yeah, there's something markedly different about the way that this show is being handled as opposed to SmackDown and as opposed to, I think, WWE, the product as a whole in the last few years. If you told me that this was a show that if I came into this show the last several weeks blind, not knowing that Paul Heyman was having supposedly a heavy creative influence on the show, and you told me that this was strictly Vince McMahon's vision. Now, I mean, obviously, at the end of the day, the product is Vince McMahon's vision, but if you told me that this was a strict Vince McMahon show, I don't know that I would believe it based on everything that we've seen out of his booking philosophy in the last decade or so. I think that there's been that much of a dramatic shift. And the thing is that it's still unmistakably WWE. I think if anything, in the last few weeks, we've seen a reason for Vince McMahon to be confident that their vision can still be presented, even if he is not carrying the reins 24/7. This is unmistakably WWE, but it's a much better version of WWE and what they've been able to present for the last several years.
And part of it is just being able to recognize how to position the talent that they have in a much better way than they previously had been for years. I look up and down. I mean, Randy Orton is being utilized better and more effectively than he has in a very long time. AJ Styles, he's had a good run. This is also good. This is a really good use of him at this stage of his career. Drew McIntyre, already complimented that. You know, Ricochet, he needs to just be able to show off what he can do against kind of a bigger bully opponent and beat him in a short match. And he did that effectively against Mojo. He's not being overpushed, but you're keeping him in the mix. So people go, oh yeah, I like his athleticism. And he's sort of waiting for that next thing to do. I don't know what they're doing with Charlotte yet, so I just have to be patient. Yeah. I don't know how I'm supposed to feel about her. I wish Sarah Logan got put up more of a fight upon her return, so that's a thumbs down for me. But I'll keep watching. And, yeah, I mean, Brock and Heyman are more entertaining. We're seeing a lot of Brock. Bobby Lashley is being utilized in something prominent. I did enjoy him complaining to Lana, I already beat Rusev tonight, now I got to beat him again. And Lana just sort of being domineering. A few people came to mind who Lana might be based on their behind the scenes reputations, but I don't want to go there. So yeah, I mean, you know, you just roll through the show. I mean, Andrade and Rey, I mean, Rey has been one of the big success stories of the past couple months post Survivor Series. And in terms of getting utilized so well, and Andrade, I think it's getting, and Zelina are being used in a way that I think we all hoped they would after watching what they did in NXT. And they're getting so much out of Eric Rowan. Samoa Joe gets to be badass babyface Samoa Joe, which I always thought was a natural landing place for him. Big Show is a novelty legacy act in an important role. So yeah, I mean, Kevin Owens, I feel, is like maybe getting marginalized a little bit, not being the alpha and sort of sharing space with Show, who's casting a big shadow, and Joe, who seems like a little bit stronger personality right now. But I mean, that's just guarded, hesitant criticism, if anything, you know, if it's even criticism. So yeah, I mean, again, yeah, this is the strength of Raw right now is the pace of the show and utilizing talent in a way that you're not frustrated and feel that they're being underutilized and not recognized for what their strengths are.
Yeah, I think one of the biggest things is that there were three key things that I didn't particularly care for on this show, and that was the Bobby Lashley and Rusev match, just sort of the length of it. I thought it dragged, and then the way that Charlotte is being booked in general. And I think you could, not so much that I disliked it, but I think you could make a case against putting R-Truth in the ring with Brock Lesnar in any real capacity, and I'm sure we'll get into that in more detail. But here's the thing. Three segments like that on a three-hour show could sink an average Raw, and has in the past. I mean, if this were an average show, like I think SmackDown is on a lot of occasions recently, we'd be talking most dominantly about those three segments and probably critiquing the show pretty negatively. But you can pretty easily forgive those little things when you, by and large, have a much better vision for the product overall and, by and large, a lot of good segments on a weekly basis. So, yeah, those three things were things that I didn't particularly care for, but the rest of the show is headed in enough of an upward trend that, you know, we will touch upon them and we'll talk about them, but they're not dominating the conversation and they're not dominating my thoughts about the show. Whereas, you know, not even a year ago, they would have been the talking point.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. I think the truth involvement with Lesnar is going to be polarizing. I enjoyed it. But I'm absolutely willing to listen to a case being made for why it wasn't the right thing at this time for Lesnar. The idea of Lesnar becoming 24/7 champion and just basically holding the title forever was a kind of intriguing to me, but it turned out he just laughed at the belt and threw it back at Truth. He didn't want it, which in a way did kind of send a message. You know, I'm obviously this title's beneath me.
Sure.
And then it gave Mojo a chance to get a little Mojo back. And as such as that ever happens, winning a 24/7 title. But now was this the first 24/7 title change that did not happen with a roll up, but actually involved violence?
Maybe the first one in months.
Yeah.
The first one I can recall in a while, for sure.
Yeah. So I found that newsworthy. I got a kick out of Truth, and I enjoyed Lesnar. I wouldn't say Lesnar broke character, but I think the idea was that Truth kind of got Lesnar to break away from just being so stern, and actually having a chance to show some personality. And one of the things that I have noticed that struck me about watching NWA Power and the lesson that I took from it recently is everybody seems to be just having fun on that show without doing so in a way that undercuts the believability and intensity of the immersive environment that they create and the rivalries. I mean, you know, I mean the Storm, all this stuff is fantastic, but everybody seems to be having a good time. And I know there's some issues with that company and some of the things that have happened and been said by Cornette and all that. But one thing I've taken from NWA Power, besides really thoroughly enjoying a lot of aspects of the show, is it's really fun to watch a wrestling show where it feels like people are having fun and to a degree ad-libbing sometimes. And in NWA Power, there's a lot of ad-libbing. There's a lot of people speaking in a way that feels like they're in a zone, but they're speaking extemporaneously, knowing who, what their character is and what the issues are they should speak about. And they have some talented talkers making that happen. And it's just amazing in 2020 talking about Ricky Morton adding, cutting good promos as a wrestler. But it's happening. And Raw has, this was a moment where it felt like Heyman and Lesnar had some fun. And Truth was kind of having fun out there. And some of the stuff Truth is doing and I think is growing kind of tired and stale and repetitive. But I thought this was one of the one of Truth's more effective comedic segments in the role that he's playing. And then, you know, in the end, Lesnar was still a bully and slammed him down after having some fun. So I'm at this moment a defender of that segment. I'm not trying to be too open to criticism because I did enjoy it, but I'm willing to listen to some arguments from people who thought that it was bad for where they're going with Lesnar, but I'm not so sure about that.
Yeah, I sort of was indifferent watching it. I thought, you know, there were times where I was like, yeah, okay. I mean, I usually get a kick out of most R-Truth segments, and I chuckle at least a couple of the things that he says, and that was no different tonight. And I did enjoy Brock letting loose a little bit and having a laugh. The one thing I wonder is whether or not it's smart to mingle the 24/7 title in any way with the serious main event level. But like you said, I mean, Brock did look at the belt and just essentially throw it down. I think I would definitely be pretty strongly against it had he opted to pin Truth to win the title. But I think showing, you know, that the title is well beneath him and it's not really something that he was even interested in pursuing is what sort of keeps me on erring on the side of, you know, this was probably fine. And of the three things that I said I disliked, I mean, really the Truth and Lesnar thing would be a distant number three.
It crossed my mind. For Lesnar to be Truth for the belt and then kind of pull Cody, there'd be some liability issues here, but then just throw it into the crowd. You know, just whip it in the crowd like Cody does. And if you can strategically toss it into the hands of like some fan who's not really a fan who then gets rolled up by Truth or, you know, whatever, I don't know. But I wasn't sure where they were going with it, but I thought, God, Lesnar in the ring with the 24/7 title, where are they going to go with this? And I think they could have gone down a road that would have been slapsticky and undercut Lesnar. I think they stopped short of that. Let's pause, introduce ourselves, and give out the phone number so we can get some callers here or get some calls in here. This is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show for Monday, January 13th, 2020. I'm Wade Keller, host of the program, and I'm joined by Brandon LeClaire from PWTorch.com. He covers WWE Friday Night SmackDown every Friday night as an alt perspective reporter. So check out his reports with analysis and detailed rundown of what happens every Friday on SmackDown, right alongside my reports on SmackDown every Friday at pwtorch.com. Brandon, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me. Glad to be here. This is my first Raw in a while. I've been doing SmackDown lately, so.
Yeah. Good to have you on. And we got a lot to talk about. Let's give out the phone numbers and invite a conversation with our listeners. 347-215-8558. If you're listening to us live at about 11:26 p.m. on Monday night, give us a call. You're invited to do so every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday night. You can always find links to the live stream of our post shows at pwtorch.com in my TV reports on Raw, AEW Dynamite. Someday we'll also do NXT and USA, and then Friday nights for SmackDown. You can also almost always find a link and the phone number to call on our Twitter account near the end of the show, at PW Torch. It just depends on whether I remember, which almost always I do, at PW Torch. So that's another good way to find our stream. We got a lot of you who have called up and a couple of you ready to talk to us. If you want to join them, push 1 on your keypad if you are someone who's already called into the show and you'll be next in line, or you are invited to call and push 1 on your keypad to get in line to talk about tonight's show. Do you think we're overrating Raw or are you enjoying it as much as I have been lately? And where do you think they're going with some key personalities? We haven't talked about Becky and Asuka yet, and I know we've got an email on that. We also have an email on Drew McIntyre and Brock Lesnar. So you can add to the mailbag, Wade Keller Podcast at pwtorch.com if you're interested in contributing to the show, but not interested or able to give us a call live. That's Wade Keller Podcast at pwtorch.com. All right, let's take our first phone call from area code 305, and then on deck 443. And again, you can be right after that if you push one on your keypad or give us a call. 305. I think some people are watching some sporting event, but I thought football season was over when the Vikings lost Saturday, Brandon.
Yeah, I mean, I'm there with you as a Ravens fan. Things ended for me as well. Unfortunately, it was a rough weekend.
Being a favorite in losing, and I've been there. Yeah. I was in the dome for the 15-1 Vikings losing to Atlanta because of a missed field goal late in the game. After infamously chanting Super Bowl a few minutes before Gary Anderson took the field and missed back in 98, I was a season ticket holder with the Vikings for years. I know what it's like to lose as a favorite, and that stings more than, you know, upsetting the Saints and then losing to, frankly, a better team like
happened
to the Vikings on Saturday. So, you know, you always hope for an upset, as the Texans fans did for about a quarter and a half. That was amazing. Wow.
Yeah, crazy. I mean, a crazy weekend of football again. The playoffs have been a lot of fun this year. And usually we get at least one weekend of stinkers, and that hasn't been the case. So hopefully championship weekend doesn't disappoint. But this final quarter of the national championship game is shaping up to be exciting, too. So I'm guessing a lot of people are probably still tuning into that.
Yeah, makes sense. But we do have 305 on with us now. So go ahead, 305, state your name and where you're calling from.
There was a football season this year.
From a Miami Dolphins.
Javier from...
Hey, Javier.
Javier from Hialeah. How's it going?
Yes. When's the last time the beloved Dolphins made the playoffs?
I don't remember.
Okay. And you have a good memory.
Season, I know there was a season like a while ago, but yeah, it's been a while. I mean, yeah. It's been a long time since we've had.
at least Adam Gase isn't near.
I have optimism. I have optimism for the future. I mean, how the season started by the way that it ended was, you know, that I do think that he should be coach of the year just for, you know, turning what they had into a, you know, a team that was able to win a few games when, you know, the word historically bad was being thrown around, like, you know, the fourth game of the season. So.
Yes. All right. Well, we have contractually reached the end of the allowance on podcasting to talk about the Dolphins, Javier. So we need to move on. What do you think of Ra?
Back in October, I said that if things don't turn around, I was giving them until pretty much the Royal Rumble. And at that point, I had no idea that I think on the shows I watch weekly, I think that Raw has been my most, like, the one I look forward to the most.
Wow.
Right now.
Yeah.
So
I don't blame you. I think you can make a case for that with the quality of wrestling, the production values, the booking, the utilization of characters. And I mean, all the shows have their ups and downs, you know, their highs and lows, but I can understand somebody watching Raw these last, you know, almost 2 months now and you know, last, I don't know, 6, 7, 8 weeks and just being like, yeah, that's my show now.
Yeah, and the star power. You know, I think that's what edges it out just a little bit over NXT. By a tiny, tiny bit.
But, I mean, it's an all-star cast. I mean, I've been using that term, but I mean, you know, I mean, Brock Lesnar and Paul Heyman and Heyman doing his mic work and Samoa Joe and Kevin Owens and Rey Mysterio and Randy Orton all being utilized really well as baby faces and Drew McIntyre with whatever they're doing with him and Seth Rollins getting rejuvenated and AOP and Andrade. I mean, and Andrade, Aleister Black and Buddy Murphy and what they've been doing and on and on. I mean, it is a really good roster and that hasn't always guaranteed good shows, but those two things are coming together.
Yeah, I mentioned earlier, you know, thinking that this was sort of unmistakably WWE's vision, but a good version of it. And to me, I think that, you know, analysts of the product and people who follow closely always kind of get the reputation for being overly critical of WWE, and rightfully so on occasion. But I think the product more or less has warranted that type of criticism over the last decade or so. And I am always have been and continue to be a big fan of WWE's overall vision for pro wrestling when it's executed well. And by and large, I don't think it has been for the better part of again, the last decade or more. And this is a good version. This is a good version of their vision. So, yeah, it's been really enjoyable.
Yeah, go ahead, Javier. Anything else specifically about Raw?
Well, I don't want to, some people criticize like, oh, you're overselling it. And I do want to say that this is not like the Stone Cold era, but I think they have laid the field where someone like that can rise. Because when you do stuff, when you set up a good tableau, then that's when someone like a Stone Cold can, emerge from that. So, and I think that's why I think I'm like most excited is because, they're getting some of the stuff right, Specifically, I think Drew has become one of my favorites right now with what, with what he's been doing, just the, how light he's been, how personable he's been, away from that, I'm going to eviscerate you kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah. Brandon, what do you think of what they're doing with Drew?
Drew McIntyre has been one of my favorite guys on the roster for a while, and I was really disappointed with how he was handled when he was taken off TV for a while, came back, and was just kind of, there, not really doing much of anything. I didn't care for his whole run as Shane McMahon's lackey. I thought that since coming to the main roster, he's been pretty grossly misutilized given his size and his ability and his athleticism for his size. This is the best version of Drew McIntyre we've seen on the main roster, and because of the way that the show has been going, I'm hopeful that the upward trend continues.
Yeah, I agree. I'm really curious to see how not only where they go with him, but if they're sort of feeling their way through to see how the fans react to him, and if this almost isn't a genuine test to see do we want to go all in with him as a face, or is it not catching on, so gaining traction, so we kind of want to go back to him being more of a heel. Maybe there's some flexibility built in here, but he does seem, other than Jerry Lawler making him his pick to win the Rumble, Drew seems like a good bet to be a top 2, 3, 4 candidate to win the Rumble.
And the thing is that he's so good at both. He's so good at playing the heel and the babyface. The one problem that they do run into with him in the babyface role is a lot of the guys he faces are just smaller than him, just because of his size. So naturally, he probably slots in a little bit better as a heel. But there are a few guys that can really fire up and deliver a really genuine babyface promo the way that Drew can in the last few years without seeming too affected or too like sort of overbearing or mushy. Like he's just very, very good at walking that line. And I mean, either way, like I just have a lot of faith in that guy if he's allowed to kind of shine.
Yep. Javier, anything else?
You want me to give you the translation for Rey and Andrade?
Yeah, I would. I actually thought he when they were doing that.
Yeah, the at first Andrade called Rey a ratero, which is kind of like a small-time crook, petty thief kind of thing. Then he says, I'm going to retain my championship because it is mine, and I'm then going to retire Rey Mysterio.
Okay.
And then when Rey Mysterio says, I am no criminal, and who are you to say whether I am worthy to represent my people? I represent my Latin people with my heart and with much honor. So I mean, he really is doing – I'm amazed at the promo work that he's been doing, and it's really sad all those years that they just kept interrupting him. Although I do have to say on my end, I think they're getting a little bit close to pandering. I mean, I like the stuff they're doing, but I kind of wish they just toned it back just a little bit. But
in what respect?
Yeah, I mean, the stuff they're doing is awesome.
In what respect are they?
He's kind of overselling the whole, I'm representing the Latin, this is a battle for the Latin soul kind of thing.
Yeah.
That's coming a little bit, just like how they keep it's the same notes being hit. So that's kind of like, I'm like, okay, come on, let's, you know, let's make this a little bit more than, you know, the fate of the Latin people are is raised, yeah. resting on our soul, on our shoulders. Yeah.
It's funny that crossed my mind a little bit watching. I mean, I've you know, really been enjoying this, but yeah, it can, I was wondering if it was just going, they were laying on that a little too hard instead of, you know, just letting Andrade and Ray be two wrestlers who also are feuding and have that be an aspect. But yeah, like you said, not overplaying that hand. And yeah, I get what you're saying.
Yeah, this promo specifically, this was the one that felt like it started tilting over to that other extreme. So yeah, that was
yeah.
the. Yeah.
I think that's fair to keep an eye on. Javier, what's your vote for R-Truth and Lesnar and Heyman? Thumbs up, middle down, mixed, not sure?
No, I mean, I like most of the segment. I had two thoughts while it was going on. The first one was when he took down R-Truth, I'm like, and he picked up the mic, I'm like, is he going to tell Paul Heyman to come in here and pin him so that then Heyman becomes 24/7 champion and that's kind of like the way they retire the belt?
yeah.
So that was my first thought. My second thought was like, it was a cool segment, but just him taking out, I thought when he started like dancing, he should have just like punched him in the nuts and then like ran away, you know, because I thought it was, you know, it kind of felt demeaning to Truth, you know, just the way that he just
yeah.
took him out. So,
yeah.
you know, it flashbacks to Kofi. I mean, I thought that, I thought it would have ended up better, in my opinion, that if Lesnar showed a little bit of ass there, and you know he Truth would get away, and then just Lesnar fuming. I thought that would have been a better end to that segment than, you know, he just takes out Truth and then be done with it.
Yeah, cool. All right, thanks, Javier. Always good to hear from you.
All right, have a good one, guys. Take it easy.
Sounds good. Yeah.
Watch Hard to Kill. I haven't seen that yet. So.
Oh, cool. We look forward to your hits and misses on it.
Yeah, probably tomorrow.
Yeah, of
take
course,
easy,
of course.
Have a good one.
Yep, take it easy. Check out Javier's hits and misses column on Impact every week at pwtorch.com. Okay, so I did something I almost never do. I turned on college football. and there was a pass, and it was a long pass, and somebody caught it. And I was like, wow, okay, this is pretty good. But I am so confused as a lifelong Viking fan and Packer hater, because from a distance, LSU looks like they're wearing Packer uniforms. Up close, it looks like they've got a Packer helmet and Packer pants, but a Vikings home jersey. And then I look in the crowd, and there's a bunch of people wearing purple cheering a team that looks like the Green Bay Packers scoring. I am completely confused. It's like, the Packers and Vikings just merge their uniforms. They merge teams. If they would ever merge franchises, that's the uniform color scheme, and it's freaking me out. All right.
Yeah, well, I don't know what to tell you.
You don't have to say anything. I'm just making an observation. All right, so if you want to give us a call, 347-215-8558, and push 1 on your keypad if you got thoughts on tonight's Raw. We got an on-site correspondent, Lexington, Kentucky. Lexington, by the way. They didn't say that, I don't think, once on Raw. Did you hear that, Brandon?
Nope. They were pushing the University of Kentucky pretty hard.
And the historic Rupp Arena.
Yeah.
Yep. And they're on campus, but they avoided Lexington. So, yeah. But, I mean, they said University of Kentucky and acknowledged where they were.
They got a couple different shots of the building that you don't see very often too. They took that, you know how they usually take like sort of the angled shot from the upper deck,
yeah.
sort of like they went for a straight ahead upper
yes.
deck, like looking at the stage, which is kind of neat. You get to see the layout on the floor a little bit better.
They did not do like the postcard shots. I mean, because they've got
yeah.
Lexington has a nice downtown and an opera house, some cool architecture. I mean, there's some things they could have done to show a little slideshow to show they're proud to be in the Lexington area, but we didn't get that. But at least not unless I fast forward past it during a commercial.
I do not believe that they did it. I just do it for everybody or don't do it. I know it's
yeah.
like I know it's the arrogance thing, but like it's so strange. I mean, like why be that arrogant about visiting other parts of the country that aren't A markets? I mean, the biggest bands and artists in the world do B tours.
Yep.
I mean, like that it's crazy.
It's 52 weeks out of the year. They should be celebrating. We go to the big cities and we bring, and if you're not in a big city, we bring Raw to your town and we draw huge crowds everywhere we go. And then show a scene of proudly of fans walking through downtown Lexington or on campus to the venue, whatever city they're in, and just really embrace that WWE, unlike a lot of pro sports who only, you know, you got whatever 32 teams in the NFL other than Green Bay. They're all major markets. That's not a dig. That's just a population fact. Obviously it represents Milwaukee, the big city, but it's a big, you know, Jacksonville's not huge, but I mean, like, there's 32 teams and Raw goes everywhere. And I mean, that could be such a selling point. And instead they're just so small and insecure about being in smaller markets. And
what's the difference? If you have a full building in Lexington, Kentucky, or you have a full building in Boston or New York, you have a full building, celebrate it. It's so strange. It's such a weird hang up.
It's almost as strange as all these Viking and Packer fans cheering together in the crowd right now. Seriously, look, the quarterback with his helmet off. It looks like he's a Minnesota Viking wearing a Viking jersey. It's just, but then nope, it's the Packers now.
So you're
field.
Okay. So you're seeing Packers pants and Viking away jerseys. So that's what you're.
Yeah. The white jerseys are that. But the helmet and the pants are Packers.
Right.
And then. When the helmet's off, it totally looks like a Viking thing because their colors are purple and gold. And then the crowd, it's like a bunch of Packer and Viking fans celebrating together, which is blowing my mind.
Well, this is an even stranger situation because I don't believe this has ever happened, but this is a home game for LSU. The national championship is technically played on neutral territory, but it just happens to be in the Superdome. So, it's an interesting, like what almost happened with your Vikings a few years ago.
Yes.
They would have been the first ones.
2 years ago, the Minneapolis Miracle, and it was destiny, and then the Eagles just blew us out. All right, enough bad memories. Let's go to 443 next. 443, go ahead and state your name and where you're calling from.
Hey, Ray, it's Kyle from Baltimore, Maryland. How you doing?
I'm doing good, Kyle. Thanks for calling. What did you think of Rob? What stood up?
That was really good. I really want to talk about the Becky Asuka contract signing and promo.
Oh, good.
I like even with Miz in her eyes, she still cuts the greatest promo ever. And I thought that she's just so, for Becky, just wants to really so desperate and really convinced that she can defeat and wants to have Asuka in the past and then just defeat her and move on. I thought that promo that she cut with her eyes shut, it was just great. I just enjoyed that.
Well, we haven't talked a lot about the Becky Asuka thing. I am, on the whole, a fan of this storyline with Becky. I like the idea that she needs this win. And I wrote this in my report at pwtorch.com that if you're a Becky Lynch fan, it's like NFL playoffs. You're going to be so you realize how important a win is to Becky, but you also are scared of what happens if she loses. And what does it mean to her? And does she just break down? Does she lose her confidence? Does she snap? Like, what's going to happen if she loses? But if she wins, it's just going to be this glorious moment for her because she is selling the idea that beating Asuka is so important to her. And then, we're kind of hearing her inner thoughts about, she talked again about the money and the fame and how it can, it can lead to some distortions in your values. And I think people who experience fame and success do end up having the inner conflict at times over that. And I think it's effective. And, she entered that just going, may the best woman win and was being a good sport about it. And Asuka, then blew the mist in her face. And so it was a very sharp, face heel dynamic. But yeah, I thought this was well done. Brandon, what do you think?
Yeah, they've got themselves a confluence of great circumstances with this angle because you have a situation where you have a beloved babyface champion who has a challenger who she has not beaten in the past, and that's very rare because WWE is notorious for 50-50 booking in all of their feuds. So very rarely do you get a rivalry where one person has not at some point beat the other person. So they've got that number one. Number two, they didn't at some point in the last year go back to the match on free TV and give away a Becky Lynch victory, which they've done many times in the past, where they've taken a feud that was hot, where one person got the better of the other person, and then 6 months later, it's thrown on Raw or on SmackDown as a throwaway match. The other person gets their win, and we move on like nothing ever happened. They never did that, and they never gave Becky the win back when they were feuding. So you get this excellent setup where they can not only acknowledge history, but they can bring in, they can actually bring their own history into a current angle, which is something that they're very, very rarely able to do because they overwrite it and pretty much ignore it. On a regular basis, and like to pretend that many things just simply didn't happen. So you've got this great confluence of circumstances for this feud, and I think that they've handled it quite excellently. I know that in all likelihood, they probably have a bigger plan for Becky Lynch going into WrestleMania, but I would have liked to have seen this be the WrestleMania match. They've been telling this story for over a year, and whether it was in the cards and they planned it all along or whether it was just luck and happenstance that got them there, they've got a really big match on their hands. And I think the way that Becky has sold it, it's come off as a big fight feel. This feels like the biggest match that the women's division has had since I guess probably WrestleMania last year.
I agree with you. Yeah. And I'm enjoying Asuka in her just really obnoxious demeanor now. I mean, her posture and her body language during the contract signing, like that kid who sits in the back row and just can't be bothered to pay attention or study or anything. The too cool for school, and then, you know, Becky being a good sport, and then, you know, just the gloating. I mean, you want to see Asuka lose. I mean, you really want to see her lose if you're just the average viewer out there.
And she seems dangerous again. Asuka was sort of taken down several pegs over the last year, and has sort of just been kind of, you know, waiting around and in the pool with everyone else in the tag division. But she seems dangerous. She seems hungry, motivated, and seems like, you know, Becky as the champion feels like the underdog.
Yeah.
And I mean, that's a great story to tell.
Yes. Kyle, anything else quick before I let you go?
I was thinking, like, do you think there should be or could be the women can have their own Intercontinental or U.S. Championship since they have the tag team titles, because all the other women who are there, like Liv Morgan and like Sarah Logan, stuff like that, have doing separate stuff. Do you think they can have their own championship at some point, or do they don't just,
No, definitely not. And, I mean, there are three women's singles titles, one on each of the brands, and
yeah.
I think that has watered things down enough. A hard no to that.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
And I guess for Seth Rollins and that whole ending, I really didn't really see that coming with Buddy Murphy coming
yeah.
being a part of the group now. I guess this would be a whole new, this whole faction that Seth Rollins is try to build here. I don't know where that's going, but it's really cool. I'm interested with it. It's really cool that Buddy Murphy's a part of it now, to see after his loss to Buddy Murphy, all the matches that he had with him. And so with this, it's going to be really cool and interesting, and I'm looking forward to see what happens with these four.
All right, cool. Kyle, thank you. Appreciate it. Good day for me.
Okay. Yeah.
Wade, can you think of the last time, I've been kind of thinking about this off and on, can you think of the last time that someone on the WWE roster went on some type of losing streak or got beat definitively in an angle and then immediately was greatly benefited by the losses and what they did in the immediate aftermath?
I mean, I suspect there's an example out there.
I'm sure there is. I just can't think of one in recent memory at all, because they're just so bad at it.
I mean,
they've just been so bad at handling people who they who come out on the losing end of feuds. I think that's why I've enjoyed this as much as I have. I mean, to think that Buddy Murphy kind of, I mean, coming into this situation, Aleister Black looked to be, you know, 3-4 notches above Buddy Murphy on the totem pole. And not to say Black was even that high, it's just that that's sort of how low Murphy was. And by the time this was over, I came out feeling like Black went up a peg or two and Murphy met him. I mean, and he lost all three matches.
Yeah.
It's been a great angle anchored by excellent matches.
Yeah. All right, cool. Well, we got some emails to get to, and we're going to break away, talk to our on-site correspondent who just emailed a few minutes ago and said he is ready for us. We'll find out what it was like in the building on campus at the University of Kentucky. And if you are listening and want to contribute to the show, you still can. Wade Keller Podcast at pwtorch.com. So we'll be back right after this with our in-person report.
Don't just listen to PW Torch's brand of wrestling coverage. Read it too.